Hello and welcome to Journey to a Dream, brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Now, our podcasts are not just for people on two wheels. Today, we're talking to somebody who normally rides around the course on three. And interestingly, we also get to hear life from his partner's point of view as well. Let's meet them.
So I'm Jake Roberts.
And I'm Abby Taylor.
I'm a sidecar passenger. I'm 19. Started when I was about 16. And, well, as soon as I could, really. But yeah, I've grew up around it, so it's all I wanted to do. Me dad used to do it. We don't really speak now, but yeah, he used to do it. So all my memories, earliest memories, are from being up in the paddock and racing and stuff. And growing up, like, Sir Ryan and Callum and stuff, running around together. And then all of a sudden, you're racing together. It's a bit mental. Obviously, they're a bit quicker, like, but yeah, it's just... when you grow up to do it and, like, around it, it's literally all you want to do. You, like, spend, like, going to bed every night just like, oh, I can't wait to do a TT. And then you finally do it.
And from making that decision to actually making it happen, how's that process been?
Fast, very fast. I got my novice license when I was in the May of being 16. So that would have been, what am I now? Yeah, 2 years ago, just after COVID. And within 6 months of actually racing, I had my national license. So then all I had to do was get enough signatures to do the TT. So it was literally like, I think back to back for like 9 or 10 weeks. We were just away every weekend, like just trying to get to it.
Being a sidecar passenger, I mean, I don't know whether you'd be able to put into words what that experience is like, because watching from the sidelines, it looks terrifying.
It's not that bad, to be honest. And everyone says, oh yeah, that's crazy. That's just because you do it. But it's actually not that bad. It's such a weird feeling. You don't get it doing like anything else. Like, I just like going fast in general, like doing anything sort of dangerous or exciting, all sorts of bike racing, anything. But yeah, when you're on there, I think it makes a difference when there's two of yous on it and you're just so in tune, and it's just such a weird feeling. It's ace. It's just such a buzz.
But what is it like literally not having any direct control, because you are literally in the hands of your driver?
Well, it's, you do really. So like short circuit racing, you get it a lot more, because like, we go around a corner and I'm not doing exactly what I should do, the bike will sort of let you know you're not doing your job. So short circuit racing, and sometimes when the boys are pushing on roads, you'll see it as well, but they'll like snatch from side to side, and that's, it's just like struggling for grip and stuff like that, and when you're really on it. But yeah, Jacko, my driver, he'll know when I'm not where I should be, and I do as well. So
you're not a sidecar passenger?
No, I'm just the supportive partner.
What is it like from your point of view? Because, like I say, watching it when you've got no direct connection with somebody is one thing, but when, you know, it's somebody that you love going around there, that must be quite terrifying sometimes.
It's hard because it's all he's ever dreamed of. He loves it, and he comes off and he's buzzing, but it's so scary. Like, you're just on edge constantly until they ride back into the paddock. That's when you can breathe then. It feels like you don't breathe for like an hour.
And just listening to Jake talking about it, it does seem that to do what he wants to do, you have to live and breathe it.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to soak it all up. You've just got to work your backside off to get wherever you want to be.
Jake, just talk us through what the preparations for the TT were like then, because I think, again, people see you on the start line and don't necessarily think about what's gone into making that happen.
Yeah, so a lot of money, first of all, like a lot of money. I mean, we've got a long wheelbase sprinter van that's we've got converted into a camper van, and just to put that on the boat alone with a bit of a cheaper rate, it's like £400, and then you put 100 quid of diesel in it or something like that to come and get your signatures, and then you've got your race entries, which are like 300 quid, and a set of tyres on a sidecar are £1,000, and you need that every meeting if you want to be competitive. So it's in and around £1,500 every single time you leave the island to go racing. And Derby's great, but there's not enough of it, and that we struggle for entries and stuff like that. So to the way the signatures work and stuff, you've got to be active enough, you've got to do so many races, and it's a bit of a hindrance living over here, but you've just got to make the extra effort to do it. The boys over there, they can drive a couple of hours, and we always find it quite funny, don't we? We'll get to meetings like with time off work, and towards the end of the year, you're trying to stretch all your holidays, and we're leaving on the 6 o'clock ferry, getting in at midnight, driving to Cadwell Park
four
for 3 hours.
So you're there at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and then you wake up in the morning and someone goes, I drove all the way from up north, I'm knackered. And it's like, you've had an absolute journey to get there. But and then getting the red-eye boat back, getting in at 6 o'clock and going straight to work. But Yeah, it's worth it when you get to it.
Done that plenty of times.
Is this what you signed up for?
Well, I've got no choice, really.
In terms of the money then, what is the process in terms of getting sponsorship and getting the money financially that you need like?
Well, sidecars, it's a bit different. Everyone, it's really tight-knit. I mean, you'll know that from Girl Man interviewing people. Everyone knows everyone in racing in general, but sidecars, it's literally just like one big family, so... And it's quite niche, like not many people know about it. Everyone, like, there's always asking questions, but it's sort of just hoot through meeting people and getting to know people. I mean, Davey, the AV Cranes, he's been a massive help. He literally got us going. That's the reason I started. I was living in the pub where I was living, and he was drinking in there, and he sponsored Jacko already and literally took me from literally just drinking with him and spieling rubbish and how I want to go racing. And he was like, well, why don't you come up to Jerby? And then... It just slowly starts progressing from there, and it's just you need a lot of help from people as well, people that look at you and go, you really want to do this, don't you? So, yeah.
We should probably at this point talk a little bit about the driver that you ride with. Tell us about him.
Yeah, so Mike Jackson, his name is. He's he probably would have been here if he could, but he's Chocker himself as well. That's his business, the freight hub. So, yeah, he's been doing this for a long time now. Callum Crowe started with him. They won the British F2 Cup together. Harry Payne, who's away... doing great in the World Championships. He's sort of known for... He says himself, I seem to make all these superstars. And he always seems to stay in the shadows a bit. But yeah, he's unbelievable in like his racecraft and everything. But he had a bit of a crash in 2018, I think it was, with Sarah Stokoe. And he took an injury to his hand and he lost half of that finger. That one got fused straight. He lost half of that one. And he had a long road to recovery doing that just in himself. So it was sort of a good match when... I come along because I was just getting to the age of doing it, and he's been at the front end of like British Championship and stuff, but he was getting back into it, so he was taking it slow as well, so it worked quite well, and then we just went from there.
And what is that relationship like between you? Because I guess it has to be intuitive almost, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you see us on going around the TT course and things, and people think, oh, you must be mental to trust each other, but you don't just go racing on a weekend, like you're talking throughout the week. You are like close friends, best friends. I mean, I obviously trust them enough to take me around the TT course, but yeah, you've got to find someone that you really gel with before you're even on the bike. Like it's a weird sort of thing. You get used to it when you start racing with them, but there's a few people you can ride with and you're like, whoa, I'm not getting on that again. Yeah, some people use you as literally a ballast, and some people are like, Jacko used to be a passenger himself. He's passengered for Carl Bennett and stuff like that. So yeah, he's just very understanding as well.
And how do you communicate when you're going around that quickly?
You don't really, which, yeah. Some people think we've got, like, intercom, which we don't.
Would that be a good idea?
Probably not, because I just sort of, yeah, I just make all sorts of crazy noises.
I can
noises
see him go around and he's, like, nodding his head. Like, I can see he's singing a song inside his helmet.
Yeah, I just enjoy it. Like, I'll be, like, talking to myself. Like, around the TT course, you're talking to yourself constantly, but it's almost... I don't think it would be a good idea. Some people, I think it's been tried, but you're both in your own zone. So he, like sidecar drivers will say, and Jacko tells me this all the time, he says he rides that like he's on a solo bike. It's only when we sort of get back to the grandstand or whatever, he's like, oh, he's still there. So yeah, I'm doing my thing and he's doing his, but you're just both on the same bike.
And you are really incredibly young to have already achieved what was one of your goals, to race in the TT. At what point did you make that decision that the TT was something you definitely wanted to do?
That was always the plan from, so I mean, I remember like speaking to Chris Kinley, and my mum was like telling me stuff like I'd be dead young, and Chris would be like with me in the microphone and like the winner's enclosure and stuff, and I always said like this is what I'm going to do. And everyone's got big like dreams and big goals, and then to actually like get to it, it's just crazy. Like I still can't believe I've done it now, and it was only this year, but yeah, it's just bonkers.
And in terms of your family's response, because I'm guessing they will have known from a very early age that this is what you wanted to do, but what was the general reaction from them?
My mum sort of, I think she always just sort of put it to the back of her mind that I wouldn't do it. I mean, I remember when we finished the TT and we were all like enjoying a drink and everything, just relaxing a bit. She said, I knew you were going to do this. She said, I used to put like the carrier, like the kid baby carrier. She said, we used to put that on the platform of the sidecar when my dad was riding with Dave Molyneux. We used to put that on the platform of the sidecar and Dave would be warming the bike up and you'd actually fall asleep. She said, we should have known then really, but I think she knew she wasn't going to escape it, but yeah.
And in terms of the day job, what is that?
I work at Magic Carpets now, so I was apprentice mechanic for a bit as well, but I've got a really, really, really good job. All that's on my mind constantly is going racing. I think anyone that goes racing is like that. I mean, people are interested in progressing their job, and don't get me wrong, I'm interested in all that as well. And like, we've just moved into our first house and stuff like that, but like, it's just, my head's just constantly racing. Like, the winter going into now, it's the worst time of the year. Like, you'll know, you'll say that yourself.
It'll be miserable for months and months, and then it'll get to my birthday, which is a week before the season starts, and then we have a big blowout for my birthday, and then it's back racing for 6 months, and he's the happiest he can be.
Yeah, it's, there's just nothing like it, I don't think, anywhere.
So is he never short of things to get him for Christmas?
Well, I know. He's constantly needing a new back protector, new boots, leathers, helmet. The list's endless.
Just thinking about the work, and I suppose that's what's great about you, you living here, growing up here in the Isle of Man, is that people do understand that complete obsession.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I've, people are in England and stuff, it must be a bit harder for them, and it's like, oh, I need 2 weeks off to go over to the Isle of Man and race on public roads, and they're a bit like, what? But over here, it's like, oh, I'm doing the TT. And it's, you get such a great reception from people as well. Like, my grandmother, she was watching Ramsey, like, because we're from Ramsey, and she said, like, the noise when you come through Parliament Square, it's like, we were in 13th, and it's like, but you just know everyone, and people know you, and, like, Facebook and stuff like that, like, people commenting on stuff like that. It's crazy to see that even though you're not up there, like, just from being everyday Joe and knowing people, they support you.
And I think there's a real affection, isn't there, for the sidecar community?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. People love it. I think people are just a bit gobsmacked by it. And I think, we are. We must be a bit crazy, but it's normal to us.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it. The reality is that however you choose to go round the TT course on closed roads, it is dangerous. And I just wonder how... I don't know, how do you address that in your own mind? Is it something that you ever really think about?
Yeah, yeah, and I spoke to a few people about this at TT. I think people need to speak about it a bit more, to be honest. I had this, like, just dread the whole time, like, running up to TT, even all through practice week and stuff. You've just got it in the back of your head that, like, something could happen, and it's... Everyone sort of is thinking the same around you, and, like, the start line's, like, a crazy... Like, the first ever race, like, both races as well. It's, you almost feel guilty, like you're saying bye to everyone, and like it's just really eerie, and it's just, it's not a nice feeling at all. But then I'm sort of the lucky one, because as soon as we leave the grandstand, that he's got that tap on the shoulder, everything's gone for me. I'm racing, but these guys have to sit there for an hour and still feel that same feeling. So that's where, yeah, it's, everyone's got it in the back of the mind. And last year wasn't a good year for the sidecars. We've had friends from the racing community that sadly died over here, but it's just, it never stop any of us doing it, I don't think, but it's, yeah, it's always in everyone's minds.
And would you be able to maybe put into words what it is like for you standing on that start line, certainly for the first time this year?
Terrific. Like, you feel like the emotions just take over, like you just can't keep it in. I think I did pretty well at keeping myself together. I was crying, but I was crying behind my sunglasses so no one could see. And like, you'll see pictures of us all on the start line, and I've got a face like thunder. Like, honestly, you'd think that we'd just had the biggest argument ever. Like, I've got a face like thunder, but it's just that dread. And then you're walking along with him, and we hold hands as we're walking up, because there's a bit where, like, where they tap to say that you can go, that's no man's land, none of your family, friends can go in there. There's just two bikes in there, so you have to say goodbye to them before that. But we walk up holding hands while everyone's pushing the bike up, Jacko's in the bike ready to go. And then as soon as he lets go, that's when that feeling just gets even worse. But I know he's gone then, so I can display the emotion I want to, because I don't want to show it in front of him, because he just feels worse. He said to me when we got back to the van, he was like, I just feel so guilty. I feel horrible. And I was like, no, because it is such an amazing feeling for me, because you're doing what you love, but it's also just so scary.
That's a real responsibility for you to carry, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. To be honest, I do most of the entries and everything for them. Like,
team manager.
Well, pretty much. They just put everything onto me. They just go racing, pretty much. I sort everything out, and I think they're both that laid back and chilled, which is so nice. But sometimes I'm so stressy with them. I'm like, you've got a meeting in a week. Like, what's going on? We haven't even booked a boat. So I think because I've got the responsibility, and I kind of plan everything. I know what's going on all the time. So I'm never like, oh God, what's next? Oh God, what's next? Like, I've always constantly got it in my head. We're going here. This is what's happening. This is how long we're there for. This is what time practice is. This is what time qualifying is. So I can prepare myself.
And when they're out on the road, on the track, what are you doing then?
At TT, I had the live timing on my phone. So I was just constantly refreshing the live time and waiting for them at the next sector. I had such a support network with me. I had Jake's mum. I had my best friend, Keely, and her husband, Callum. I had Natalie, Nathan, our really good friends. I had such a great support network that they were all there with me. And it was all lovely. Like, we were there. As much as we were all nervous, I wouldn't sit on the grandstand and watch. I couldn't. But as soon as I knew that they were coming, when they got to Cronk na Mona, I would walk back round up through and I'd watch them come through, and then I'd walk back to my seat and I'd sit there and I'd refresh the live timing until I knew they were coming again. And I think that was just my way of coping. Like, after what happened at the Southern last year, I would watch the whole race and I saw the bike in behind them come through. And I was like, where are they? What's going on? And this dread just like filled my body and I felt like I could just fall to the floor. And I went running around and I just remember shouting. I was like, where is he? Where is he? And they were like, I don't know, I don't know. No one could tell me where they were. And then my phone rang and it was Jake and he was like, I'm so sorry. And I've come off. And it was all I heard. And he was like, I'm okay, I'm okay. And then he was like, right, I love you, bye. And it was literally like a 30-second phone call. And then I'm like walking up and down looking for him. And someone's like, they've just rode back into the paddock. So I'm sprinting up back to the paddock. And Jack was like, I'm so sorry, Abby. I don't know what's happened. And that broke my heart because I was like, it's no one's fault what's happened to you. But no one could tell me where he was. None of the officials could tell me anything. And I was his next of kin and I had no clue. And then the marshal phoned me back. So it was obviously the phone he called me off. So they had my number. And he said, I'm sorry, love. I don't know what's happened. He's on the floor and he's bleeding. And I was like, what? I was like, what's happened? Where are you? I was like, I needed to get to him. I was just like, I need to know where he is and I need to know what's going on. And no one could tell me anything. And Jacko was like trying to figure it out. He was like, I honestly don't know. So I went back up and they were like, we're sending an ambulance around looking for him. But then they told me he'd walked off. It was like so many mixed messages. So I think because I only did the entry for the Southern last year, so I felt like this year everything had to be on time, organised, because I needed to know everything was going on, like, at every point. Like, I would never want to go through anything like that happened at the Southern again. It was awful.
Jake, what do you remember about what happened?
That was, believe it or not, the first ever time I'd ever come off, like, a sidecar. We'd never had a crash or anything, so we'd been pretty flat out for about a year and a half. And you've got to do one road race signature to go to the TT, so the boys in England obviously preferred Scarborough, or unless they come over here anyway. But for us, it's the Southern 100, and TT is always the goal. But road racing's road racing, and the Southern's just another one to tick off the box. But I went into that we'd been achieving such great results in short circuit and like British Championship. We were running. We were probably still third in the British Championship at that point. We finished fifth, and like, I think, yeah, being 18 years old and doing your first road race, I had definitely a bit of a chip on the shoulder, and it's completely different. I'm not sure what it's like for the solo boys, but the difference between racing on a track and racing on the road, it's something that I didn't get into my head as much as I should have done. The wind, for starters, you don't really get any wind on short circuits, but like through the trees and stuff and around the 700, the wind was just unbelievable. Arm pump's a big thing for all of us riders, solo sidecars, but sidecar passengers, I'd say in general, because you literally are just clinging on. And I was just, my arms just had nothing left in me, and I literally just barreled off the back of the bike, like my arms just let go. But
I learned from that. Afterwards, though, is there was a massive problem with his levers. They, as he was tucked down in the bike, where the wind should just be going over the top of him, he had a cone at the top of his neck, and the wind was just going in down the back of his levers, and it was just dragging him and dragging him and dragging him. So it was actually a fault in the levers. And when he did come off and he did go skittling down the road, the levers just burst. They just burst open. They weren't stitched together properly. They were completely rubbish. They were awful. So when he got back, obviously he still had all his stuff. Everything was like, he just had a brand new RI helmet, like £1,000. Luckily,
it did not have a scratch on it.
It was fine. Like there was nothing wrong with it. But his leathers were literally in pieces.
I was really, really, really lucky. So everyone that knows the 700 course, it was down in towards Stadium Corner. It was probably the fastest point of the circuit I could have come out. And there's a bit of a, as you come out of Church Bends, you go round through Great Meadows, I think it is, and there's a bit of a, on the sidecars, there's like a bit of a step. It must be where the road changes surfaces or whatever. On the run down to Stadium, you can literally see the football club. And we're tucked right in there, but as it's gone over the step, it's like lifted my back up. And the wind must have just pulled me a bit, and I just had nothing to like pull me back in. So yeah, I come out there and I was in a, it's a straight line. Luckily, if that was through any sort of bends, I'd have been ran over without a doubt. But I slid towards the curb and I hit the curb with my right foot, I think it was, and then I sort of flip. I've bounced back the other way, and I was like, and I remember thinking I just need to get towards this wall because the next corner's a left-hander, so everyone's on the right-hand side of the road. So I was like, I need to get over to this side. And I was laid down, and I was like, oh, well, now I'm on the wrong side of the road from the pavement. I need to get back over. And I could, like, the road was just rumbling underneath me as, like, the bike's coming past. But, yeah, I was very lucky. I mean, Darren Hope, another Manx sidecar crew, and Lenny, they said they literally, they were a bit behind us. I think Mike Russell as well, and I can't remember who he had on there, but they sort of swerved out of the way of me after I'd come off it. And Darren Hope said, we must have changed down to about fourth gear and you were still rolling at the same speed we were going.
I remember him saying that clear as day.
So, yeah, that was a big eye-opener as well, and I changed my whole outlook to racing. I proper had to ground myself a bit and realised I had to put a bit more effort in. I wasn't just this wonder kid that I thought I was. And then that's why it was such a big thing doing TT as well, because people were talking. I mean, I was only 18. Everyone was saying, oh, like, you're doing so well, blah, blah, blah. And I think after that, I sort of had something to prove then as well, because people were thinking, oh, yeah, well, he got to his first road race and he come off, but then luckily I was all right. But I remember the last lap of the first sidecar race, we come round the Craig and I burst into tears there. We still had like to get back round, but I was crying like the whole way down. I was like, oh, I can't believe I've done this. And then like you come in and you're coming up the return road, and I felt so bad as well. Like, there was everyone was like hanging over, like trying to give me like high fives and stuff, and I was just in bits. I like couldn't even move anymore. I was knackered, and I was like waving to people like, I'm sorry, I'm not getting up to give you a high five. But yeah, it's just to go from that as well, that low with the Southern and coming off and stuff, and then thinking, because the Southern's just after the TT, I was thinking, right, I've got less than a year now, I've got to work my backside off. And because that was the plan at Southern TT, and I was like, Jacko as well, like, bless his heart, he never doubted me at all. Like, after that, like, I was like, I had my doubts in my head. You'll know that I doubt myself all the time.
Yeah, he was really bad for a few months, and everyone was just like, what can we do to stop him from doubting himself? He was like tapping Jacko, and when he taps Jacko, Jacko knows it's either because he needs to stop or there's something wrong with the bike.
That's the only way we sort of communicate, from what you're saying earlier. You just smack them on the back or on the leg or anything like that.
Or a squeeze if someone's behind them. And he was like tapping, and Jacko wasn't stopping, and he was coming back and he was going, he's not stopping. And Jacko was going, this is the only way I can think of for him to get over it. He was like, he needs to get over it. He was like, I'm just going to go. And he was like, and unless I think something's seriously wrong, then I'll stop.
This is only on short circuits, by the way.
Yeah, no, it wasn't at the roads. He said to me, and he was like, don't tell Jake what I'm doing. And I was like, okay, I won't. And he was coming back. He was going, he's not stopping. I've had enough of this. And I'm going, but do you really need to stop? And he's going, what are you starting for as well? And he's getting really grumpy. And I'm just going, Jacko, just carry on. Just keep going. And it was fine, and it worked. So whatever Jacko's thought process was behind that, it worked.
That intuition was just there. And I suppose, you know, mentally it was going to take you a long time to get back into it.
The 700 was whenever it was last year, and then we had a Cadwell Park British Championship round 2 weeks later.
About 3 weeks later.
I was on crutches for a week. That's my finger there from sliding down the road. That's like the bone now, because I went down like that. It just burst my glove to bits. So, I had a few scobs here and there, but my foot was the biggest problem. I'd actually torn the tendon that runs like along the top of your foot. So like the bit that does that. So Isla Scott, the physio, she worked
amazing.
Absolute wonders. I said to her, I went there and explained what happened, and I was like, I need to be riding in 2 weeks. And she was like, what? And she was like hanging off my foot every which way, massaging it, and I must have gone there a couple of times. And we got to Cadwell, and for people, like, when you're on the sidecar, the tray that we sit on, effectively, when they brake, obviously they're, it's not like a bike, they brake with their left foot, so the gears are switched around, and they brake with their left foot, and because they're using their leg, obviously the braking force is dead hard, so we put our feet on the back of the platform as like an anchor, and it's, that's just like embedded in me as well, like, and my foot was obviously still sore, and we were coming up the back straight at Cadwell, he was slamming on the brakes, I was putting my foot there, getting pain, and then like it was just crazy, and every time I got arm pump as well, I was smacking him on the back, I was like, oh no, I'm gonna come off. So yeah, it's, I think that's a struggle as well. If I was riding a solo bike, I'd have just rode round doing horrendous for a while, but when you've got someone else to like push you as well, I think that's the only reason I came back better than I did as well.
You've got that, again, we go back to that sort of like feeling of responsibility for someone else.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I feel exhausted just flipping it. So it is the long winter ahead. I don't want to remind you of that, but, you know, just start planning the birthday party now. What's the aim going forward?
So this year we took a sort of step back from the short circuits because Mike's just started his own business, Freight Hub. He brings freight to and from, so he's running his own business between here and the UK, and he sort of doesn't know where he's going to be today or tomorrow because he's just going where the work is. So we do normally have done the whole British Championship. We didn't this year. We sort of did the first couple of rounds because between, people don't realise as well, between March and TT at the end of May, there's not many meetings. So you've got to sort of go where the meetings are to get yourself bike fit, as we call it. You can do all the preparation as you want, but riding the bike's what you need. So we did all of that and then did TT, and we sort of haven't really done much since. I've sort of been riding with different people just to keep in the loop, I guess. But I think next year we'll have to go back to the drawing board and see what the plan is. But definitely TT probably, but depending on Jacko's situation, I might go and do bits with other people in short circuits or what. But yeah, it's a lot to just jump on and do TT with someone else. So we've been riding together a couple of years now, so that's probably the route we'll go down.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be a really hard decision because, again, you're building up that relationship so quickly. It doesn't happen probably with many people.
No, it doesn't. And driving sidecars, it's like driving, like, everyone drives their car different, don't they? And everyone drives their sidecar different, and people like different things. People want passengers to do different things. So you've got to, like, it is just all about the teamwork, like, and other drivers as well, they won't sort of tell you what they want. You've got to, we're people pleasers as passengers. You've got to keep the bike happy and the driver happy, because at the end of the day, you're not there riding it. You're just there for the ride, aren't you? But we'll just see what happens.
Obviously, we've got some great people in the sidecar community over here in the Isle of Man. Is there one person that you think, that's who I want to be like?
I don't know. It's a hard one, that is, because there's so many good people and there's so many people that to like give you help. But I mean, Patrick Farrance for one. He's that's probably it. He's helped me loads. I mean, on the run up to TT, I was bloody bombarding him on Facebook with messages. Like, he's won on a DMR chassis, that's what we ride, a Dave Molyneux bike, and he's rode with Molly and rides LCRs, and he's world champion, this, that and the other. But so yeah, probably Patrick. Yeah, he took the time as well to help me loads. As I say, everyone knows everyone, so he's known me since I was however old. And yeah, just to take the time, he comes over to do all sorts of press and stuff for the TT, but to take the time to come and speak to me and stuff as well. And
him driving around the TT course, like, yeah, giving him pointers.
It was Monday, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. First practice. Patrick was ringing me at 6 o'clock in the morning. He was like, I'm at the start of pit lane. And I was like, oh, ran up there as fast as I could and going around just to get some last minute tips and tricks. But yeah, Patrick, without a doubt.
I mean, I have to ask you what he's like as a passenger in the car.
He's a nightmare. Considering he passed his driving test after me, and I used to drive him everywhere, since he's passed his driving test and he's, like, big into his sidecars, he's a nightmare. I can't drive anywhere. He's like, I'm driving. Get out, let me drive.
I must say, though, Abby must know, like, what I do around this course as well as I do. We'll
be driving around the course and he'll be like, yeah, so where'd you get out here? What'd you do here? What'd you do there? And I just, like, splur it back to him. It's just embedded in my brain.
But there's definitely no hint of you ever wanting to do the same.
No, never.
They actually do taxi rides at Cadwell Park, so you can just rock up and you can have a go on a sidecar. And I've said to you a couple of times, do you want to do it? And she's like, absolutely no chance.
He keeps trying to convince me. Maybe with Jacko next year.
Oh, okay.
Do you reckon you'd fancy it?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I'll sit on a tray in the kitchen and just get someone to pour me round on that. It's nearly the same thing. Jake, where can people keep up to date with what you're doing and how you're getting on?
So we've got an Instagram page that I sort of run. It's MJR Sidecar. We haven't really touched that for a bit because we've been a bit quiet, but I think Jacko's got a racing page on Facebook as well, but myself on Facebook as well. That's sort of all I use Facebook for, is for racing and stuff like that. But other than that, come find us in the paddock or whatever, wherever we're racing. Yeah,
I normally put updates on my Facebook as well, so on there as well. They're normally public as well, so if they're not friends with me, they can probably still see them.
Well, Jake, Abby, brilliant to talk to both of you. Abby, good luck for the winter with it.
Thank you.
I can imagine it won't be easy, and can't wait to see what you do next year.
Oh, thank you.
This Journey to a Dream podcast has been brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Visit their website, kawasaki-insurance.co.uk, to find out how you can get covered.